question number X21, reel 2.
Mr. Baker, reel 2. How did you get on with the local population during your training?
We got on very well with them. They respected us and we respected them. At no time do I ever remember any fighting between civilians and military people or naval people. At no time can I ever remember any. Very friendly they were in general. But you see, they'd always been used to service people, and they knew just how to treat them. If they got to know that you were troops who joined up just for the war, they regarded us as something quite different, really. But of course, we were not. We were just human beings. We had many happy moments with the various people. Sometimes you would get someone to ask you out to tea occasionally, which was quite nice of them. I can remember some very happy times. There wasn't very much that we could do overnight, really. Only go down the gym and do a bit of boxing and a bit of wrestling if you were a wrestler.
Did you box a bit?
Yes, I boxed. But I was better at wrestling, really. But I was quite a handy boxer because I'd always done a lot. That was one of the things they taught us in the Boy Scouts, how to box and how to wrestle. And there aren't many people that can say this, but I can say on oath that nobody ever put me on my back when I wrestled, and there aren't many that can say that. No, because I wasn't very tall, but I was ever so strong. I could lift 300 weight just like that, like picking up a packet of cigarettes. And today, they have to have forklift trucks and all that kind of thing to lift 300 weight. Yes, we were tough in those days. And they had some wonderful donuts in the canteen, about the size of a cricket ball, and they were penny each. And you could generally manage about two of them, and you'd had a meal, and they were really good. But the food in general wasn't what I would call first class, but there was always plenty of it, yes. And, of course, it was very, very plain.
What sort of things was it?
Well, in the main, you know, it was the sort of things they could get in those days easily, because you see beef wasn't very dear, and we had plenty of beef in those days. And they used to make suet puddings with currants in them, what they called plum duff in those days, and they used to serve up a huge wad of that if you could eat it. But most days it was repetition, you know. There wasn't very much change in the diet, and that's what you had, and you seemed to live on it and quite happy to get it. Then of a night when we had our free evenings, we used to go out in the town and you know, get a cup of tea somewhere or another cake possibly and have a walk round. And then back to barracks in time to beat the whistle for bed, which was 10:30 when they used to lights out.
Did you have any trouble in adjusting to sort of military discipline and the lack of privacy and that sort of thing, military life generally?
No. In the main, we made up our minds, I suppose, that we were going to do our best, and we just got down to it. I can never remember much trouble at all, really. No. Happy days they were, and we had an occasional leave, weekend leave, and you had to go to see the quartermaster sergeant. And he would issue you a pass, and he expected you to pass him sixpence in a saucer which he laid there, which seemed to have been the custom down the ages, I suppose, that you really paid 6 months for your pass. And then I suppose he would go down the canteen at night and drink it away, I don't know. But they could all drink fairly well, these old regular Royal Marines. I must say they did. And in the main, we drifted on. And we had our leave.
How were you received when you went back home? How were you received in your local community when you went back home?
Oh, they thought we were heroes back home when we went home on leave, you know. But, of course, we were not. We were just one of thousands because nearly all the young fellas were joined up, you see. That was the trouble. They'd nearly all gone to some regiment or other, either locals or, like me, in the Royal Marines, and some to the Navy. And my friends were all over, you know, that I'd been to school with. They were in various regiments. But the local lads who joined their local regiments and had been in the Boy Scouts, they nearly all attained rank, you know. Well, you see, I joined the Royal Marines and my battalion was nearly all regulars and they went on strictly on seniority. I think I might have been a Lance Corporal by now if I'd have still been in. But you just hadn't got any hopes of promotion. And lots of my friends, they were sergeant majors and all that in no time, and sergeants. Oh, yes, missed the boat there, really. But still, we might have been easily killed by being in the wrong regiment.
What did your parents think? How did they receive you when you went back on leave?
Oh, when I went back with my uniform, they loved it, yes. They really loved it, yes. And my young brother, he was 16 at the time. They had great trouble in keeping him back from joining up. And finally, he joined the Harts Yeomanry. He was 16. And but being big, they passed him for 19, and he did service in France, Egypt, and then he went up through Palestine when they overran the Turks at the end of the war in Palestine. He went right up through there. He only was a Lance Corporal finally, but the Turks were surrendering when he went up through there, and he took 10,000 prisoners, he and his little section one day. Mentioned in dispatches for that, but of course they just were glad to hang up their tools, the Turks. 10,000, he said, he had in one day, didn't know what to do with them. That was the end of the war, of course. But anyway, my lot...
When did you finish training?
Hmm?
When did you finish your training, your basic training?
Where did I finish?
When?
Oh, then we finished our training on December the 4th, 1914. And we were then handed over, they said, you see, to the battalion, which was then made up of 1,060. That was the whole strength of the battalion.
Before we look at that, did you think that this training had fully prepared you for the war?
Hmm?
Did you think that this training you'd had fully prepared you for the war? Or did you think in retrospect that there were some things that weren't done enough, like trench digging or something?
No, the training that we did was adequate because, you see, when it came to the fact, you know, as to where you... went ashore and lived in a hole in the ground. You'd had none of that kind of training. You'd never lived in a hole in the ground in England, you see. But you, when you went ashore and lived on active service, you dug a hole in the ground and lived there like a rabbit then. And you could sympathise with how a rabbit must feel when he's hunted by mankind, because you see, you were not hunted. We were hunted by mankind, just the same as a rabbit. And he lives in a hole, and we lived in a hole, and we tried to keep down in a hole and not show up any more than we dare. That's how life is on on active service in those days. Yes. Nothing very nice about it at all, really. Only the friendship between your pals, you know. That was a great thing.
So you felt that you'd had all the training you could have done.
Oh, right? Yes, You couldn't have had any more training. No, they did their best with us, and you see, you learnt a bit of signalling and things like that. And
what sort of signalling did you learn?
Morse and semaphore. But you see, in those days, there were not these electrical instruments like they have nowadays. You see, you just had to signal, you know, in the Morse style, and with a flag. And of course, the semaphore was quite easy. And I'd done that in the scouts, so I knew all that. I knew all the dot dash business. Oh yes.
What was the unit actually called that you were attached to after December the 4th? What was it called?
Our battalion. Well, in those days they called it the Chatham Battalion. That was the named, you see, after our station. And there was the Portsmouth Battalion. That was the men from Portsmouth. And the Plymouth Battalion. They were the men from Plymouth. And the Deal Battalion. The four battalions, you see, and they made up a brigade, finally. And when we went on, you know, from Chatham, when we'd done our training and had our Christmas leave, and we then left Chatham after a time, for an unknown destination, and we then found ourselves in a village called Sutton Waldron in Dorsetshire, and we stayed there until we were there just over a week, and that was the end of January, and we stayed there until February the 6th, 1915, and
when you were there, where were you billeted?
We were billeted on... I myself was billeted on an old farm labourer and his wife and daughter. And two other Royal Marines beside myself were there in a little tiny cottage. And he kept pigs and chickens in the garden. It was very, very countrified. And he had to go to work, he said, on Sundays to feed the animals and clean them up and do the milking. And he had 12 shillings a week. That was his pay in those days. And he served us up with home-cured bacon and parsnips fried in this lovely bacon fat. And he really fed us ever so well. I'd never had anything like it. And for that, he had a golden sovereign for each of us. They paid the people who were billeting us in gold. And they all had a pound each for each of the people they billeted.
For the week?
Yes, for the week. And we were only there those few days. And then at 1 a.m., that was it, on February the 6th, we were told we were going down to Devonport to embark for an unknown destination. And the day before, they'd issued us all with helmets. And so we thought we were going to a hot country, Egypt, we thought.
Were they pith helmets?
Yes. And we were... We thought we were going to a hot country, as I say. And 1 a.m. we all fell in, and it had been raining the whole of the evening and previously, and it poured with rain the whole march to Blandford. And on the way, we waded through water a foot deep in various parts of the roadways. And, it was fantastic. We arrived at Blandford Station completely soaked right through from top to toe. And we entrained for Devonport. And we arrived at Devonport. And we went on to the docks. And we boarded a Cawdor Castle, a Union Castle ship. And they converted it into a trooper. And we boarded that at 6 o'clock on February the 6th. We duly left in a gale, got out into the channel, escorted by two destroyers, and the Plymouth Battalion followed on the Braemar Castle. And that was two battalions of Royal Marines. We went out into the Bay of Biscay. We had an exceedingly rough crossing.
Was there a lot of trouble with seasickness? Did you have a lot of trouble with seasickness?
Oh, yes, yes. We got out into the bay, and before we arrived in the bay, I should think nearly everyone on the ship was seasick. And that we went across the bay, and, of course, the old girl only tottered along at about 10 knots, and it took a long time to cross the bay, and it was the roughest crossing I've ever had. I'd never been to sea before, and, of course, lots of others hadn't. Lots of the regular Royal Marines had served, you know, at sea. But we special service men, like miners and other men, we'd never been to sea before. We crossed the bay finally, hoping that the ship would sink at any moment, because I've never felt worse in my life. It was terrible. And even the crew, some of the crew were knocked out by this rough sea. And they said they'd never seen anything like it before. Finally, we got off Cape Finisterre, and it started to ease up. And as we went down the coast of Portugal, finally arriving down to the Straits of Gib, and we turned east into the Med, and by then we started to take a slight interest in food, and we began to feed. Well, the food was terrible, not fit for pigs in the main. Potatoes were served up in nets with the shoots on the potatoes, anything up to a foot long, on served up to people who'd lived a decent life before. We were fed just like pigs. And the officers had taken on board, four of the officers had taken on board the ship, four horses. Well, you've never heard of horse marines before, and I never had. But they, Lord knows what they thought they were going to do with the horses. But the poor horses were up on deck in improvised structures, you know. And those poor devils, they all died before we turned into Gib. It was too much for them. So that was the officers' charges gone west.
How did you cope with the hammocks?
The hammock, oh yes, yes, getting into the hammocks. Well, I'd never been in a hammock before, and we were soaking wet when we arrived down at Devonport, and nowhere to dry your clothes, and we slept in our wet clothes. Well, after a time, we managed, being fairly acrobatic, to get into the hammocks, and of course there was next to no sleep. But one did feel a bit better lying down in a hammock than lying on the deck. Didn't feel quite so seasick and so ill. But anyway, after a bit, we got used to the hammocks, and managed to mount them. And when we got down towards Jib, the sun was out as we went down past the Portuguese coast and the end of Spain. And we managed to get our clothes dry. Nobody, as far as I know, had pneumonia, which they ought to have done. But being very fit, I suppose they could take it. And we turned into the Med, and the weather was really marvellous. And the old ship tottered steadily along, and we viewed Jib from about 10 miles out, but you could just see the rock, and we'd heard much about the Jib, and we saw the old girl from the sea. We then staggered on towards Malta. We arrived at Malta and went into the Grand Harbour at Valletta, and we were there 2 days.
Did you get ashore?
Hmm?
Did you get ashore?
At Malta. Oh, yes, we went ashore. And lots of them, of course, they had to go and on the beer, you know, and a few of them didn't make it back to the ship at night. But anyway, they were there on the quay in the morning and collected up. And we went ashore and saw what was going on. The most amusing thing was seeing a herd of perhaps 20 or 30 goats being milked one after another at the various houses outside the people's doors. And so they knew that they'd got milk straight from the goat. I'd never seen that before. And you saw perhaps 30 or 40 goats coming towards you, and you saw 30 or 40 goats going in the opposite direction. And there were all these goats mixed up in the road, and they had their various battles, you know. And but it was quite interesting to watch. And then suddenly the old boy would move off, the man who owned the goats, and all these goats sorted themselves out and followed him as though they were dogs. I've never seen anything like it. Most amusing, but you knew they'd had the milk straight from the animal. That was more than we knew over here. And it was lovely and sunny, although it was February. It was really nice, and of course everything was interesting, you know, being something in foreign soil. Everything was interesting.
But this your first time abroad, of course?
Hmm?
This was your first time abroad?
It was my first time, yes. Yes, my first time. And we finally left. That would be, I should think that would be February the 14th when we got to Jib. And not Jib, to Malta. And after a few days, we still thought we were going to Egypt, but when we sailed out, we started a due east course, and we still thought we might be going to Egypt, but suddenly they turned north, and we then knew we were going to somewhere else, and we then guessed it could be Turkey, but we only guessed. And we passed Cape Matapan, which is the southern point of Greece, and we then began to pass islands, which are in the Aegean. There are scores of Greek islands, and we finally went up to an island called Lemnos, and we entered a huge bay, which was called Mudros Bay. And there was next to no ships, only tiny local ships there. We were the first battalion of troops to arrive there. And the next day, the Plymouth Battalion arrived in the Braemar Castle. That made two battalions of Royal Marines. There were then there began to come in battleships not very many of them, but I can't remember the names of many of them. And one or two smaller craft, like minesweepers, they appeared to be, trawlers. And they put a boom defence across the entrance, which was about a quarter of a mile wide, I suppose. And the harbour itself, a most natural harbour, was belonged to the Greeks, and it must have been over 3 miles across. It could hold hundreds of ships, and it was very deep, fortunately for us. And we were there, and we started then to do landing operations from our own boats, going down the rope ladders and getting into our own boats and dashing ashore and doing dummy attacks on various objectives ashore, which was really our training. And we knew that we were in for something really tough. We were then told by the officers in lectures what was supposed to be on, and it was the attack on the Dardanelles with the objective of relieving the pressure on Russia eventually up through the Dardanelles, through the Sea of Marmara, past Constantinople as it was then, and up through the Bosphorus into the Black Sea. And then that would open up the route to relieve Russia at the southeastern end of Russia, southwestern end of Russia. Well, that was the theory, but it just didn't work out that way. We did this landing operations, and then on March the 4th, before March the 4th, we went out of Mudros towards the Dardanelles, which was 40 miles away, roughly. And we sighted the Dardanelles, the peninsula, and Gallipoli Peninsula, and we saw several big ships there, and one was the Queen Elizabeth, a brand new battleship, the biggest in the world, with 15-inch guns. And they had bombarded on the 19th of Feb, they'd bombarded the lighthouse at Sedlbar, and the lighthouse, and at Cape Ellis, and they knocked them down and put them out of action. We then, for some reason or other, why we were there, I don't know, but then we returned back to Mudros.
How close to the Dardanelles did you actually get?
I would say we were roughly 6 miles, you know, but visibility, as you know, at sea is very good. You can see for miles. And I'd say somewhere about 6 miles off. But having good eyesight, you know, you could see clearly what was in the brilliant sun. And we went back to Mudros. On March the 4th, we went out again, Plymouth Battalion and Chatham Battalion. And this time, Plymouth landed 60 Royal Marines on...